You're listening to the Hammershed Podcast. Get started, let me tell you about our current giveaway. For the next 4 weeks, we will be taking entries for your chance to win a free copy of Convict Conditioning. It's the inspiration for the Progressive Calisthenics certification and a must-read for all fitness enthusiasts. To enter, simply go to hammershed.com and click on Current Giveaway.
Hey, welcome back to the Hammershed Podcast. This is Brett Hamilton. I'm hosting in place today of Greg Gottfried. And with us today is Danny Cavablo. He's the older brother of Al Cavablo, who also was on the show a while back. And Danny is a bodyweight strength training expert, progressive calisthenics certification, one of the lead instructors, and he's the accomplished author. So, Danny, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Thanks, Brad. It's really great to be here. I appreciate you having me on. I'm looking forward to talking to you and covering a lot of details here. So, thanks again.
You bet. So, Danny, You grew up in New York City, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Which part of New York City were you from?
I'm from Brooklyn, New York, top of the food chain.
Very good. So when you were growing up in Brooklyn, what were some of your, passions and pursuits that you had as a youngster?
I mean, when I was growing up as a kid, the first thing I was really passionate about was music. I spent a lot of years playing music, playing in bands, traveling, touring, doing a lot of different things. I didn't even get a real job until I was in my 20s, so I was very lucky to have a pretty good run with that. But I was never really into sports or anything like that, so it's funny that I'm a trainer now.
Right.
Now, that said, throughout the entire duration of this time, I was very, very passionate about fitness, mm-hmm. just in a more non-competitive level.
Right.
So, you know, I knew other kids who were either playing sports or on a basketball team or playing sports in high school, and that wasn't me.
Right.
But I was practicing my push-ups, I was practicing my pull-ups, I was practicing my squats and my dips and all those basics, just because for me the pursuit was really about A, getting strong, and B, about doing something that I was actually in control of. When you are pursuing music or any of the arts in general, so much is out of your control. You can write the world's greatest song or paint the world's most beautiful picture, but if no one sees it or hears it, your progress is going to be very limited within your career.
Right.
However, when it comes to your own body, you reap what you sow. And that's the only thing in life that you truly reap what you sow. You put in the effort. You work on those pull-ups. You work on those push-ups, and you're going to get results.
Yeah.
And that always appealed to me. I remember in like 94, I was on tour with this band, and it was like very different time back then. We were playing in Europe somewhere, like a farm in Germany or something that was abandoned, and they were doing punk rock shows there. And I remember like doing sit-ups in the back room in a pile of chicken droppings and filth and whatever, because I was just as passionate about my workouts as I was about doing what we were doing.
Yes.
So it was a good time, but really the pursuit of fitness, not necessarily as a career, but just as an entity unto itself, has always been with me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool to hear. I'm curious, which type of music did you play when you were on tour with your band?
I'm a rock and roll guy, man.
Rock and roll. All right. Which instrument?
I'm a drummer.
Drummer. Okay. All right. You're the glue that holds everything together.
I hold it down. And I throw it down.
That's very cool. My mom is actually a music teacher, and she just retired, but she was a music teacher for over 30 years. So she'd probably be thrilled to hear that.
Very cool. Well, I'm thrilled to hear that she was a music teacher for over 30 years.
So it works
both ways.
She tried to get me into playing the violin. I did that for 3 years, but it wasn't something I enjoyed very much, so I didn't stick with it.
Got to do stuff you enjoy, right?
That's right, yep. So it's interesting because, you know, a lot of people that I knew growing up that were musicians, you know, especially in my neck of the woods, I noticed that there was kind of this divide, you know, the people who were in band and orchestra and, you know, the marching band, things like that. Like, they tended to be the people who were the, you know, avoided the fitness. And then, you know, we had the athletes and, you know, the jocks and everything. And so there's kind of that divide. And
I definitely was not an athlete. I like to be in shape for the physical and philosophical benefits of it, but I never was an athlete. And it's funny you use that word, because I still don't consider myself an athlete. A lot of the time people throw around the word athlete for somebody that just works out. I'm a guy that works out. I'm a guy that knows a lot about working out. I'm a guy that has had the privilege of working out with many, many people for many, many years in many, many parts of the world. But I'm not an athlete. I don't compete. I just train.
Right.
And the reason I train is to just bring out the best of myself, not for any quantifiable championship or career or goal. Mm-hmm. It's just really to be the best version of myself that I can be. So I'm definitely not an athlete. Well, I'm just a guy that works out.
I think that's a great message for, you know, anybody who's listening to take away, is that that's it, you know, training however you train, with weights, with the body weight, however, like, it's just such a personal pursuit. And, you know, not focusing on numbers is one of the best things that you can do, because you'll get much more out of your training, and you know, the mindfulness is so much greater if you just focus on becoming better for you and not worrying about other people.
As a culture, we are very, very goal oriented, but we are not very, very process oriented. So I think it's important to be mindful of the process, not just the goal.
What I was saying earlier about the difference between athletes and musicians and things like that was, you know, I think it's neat that as you were growing up, you still found a way to incorporate fitness into your routine, because I knew a lot of people who were those musicians that just didn't like fitness at all, no matter what it was.
So, well, I grew up at a time when Brooklyn was a very different place. You know, one of my main motivations for working out was not wanting to get my ass kicked when I came home from school. I thought that if I had a built upper body, that was less likely to happen. You know, I grew up in a time where if you were a musician and you grew your hair long, you know, people would drive by in their car and throw shit at you and yell, "Rock sucks, rock sucks." So that was the time I was coming up.
Well, I can understand your motivation then. That's sure. I grew out in the countryside where everybody kept to themselves. So.
Right.
So it sounds like you've always been really passionate about exercising and just training for personal reasons. But when you actually did decide to go get a job, you know, when you said you're in your 20s, were you intent on entering the fitness industry right away?
I actually did not become a fitness professional until I was 30.
Oh.
After doing music for a lot of years, I had a lot of jobs. I also had a lot of crappy jobs while I was doing music. So I'd go on tour, I'd come home and I'd work in a restaurant. Or I'd go on tour and I'd come home and I'd be a security guard. So over the years, in addition to, you know, playing music or being a security guard or working in a restaurant, I was an exterminator. Mm-hmm. I was a clown at kids' birthday parties. I had a lot of ridiculous, ridiculous jobs. In my mid to late 20s, I embarked on a career in event production and event marketing. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very successful with that. It's funny because at the time, I had people, you know, I started out in a very, very lowly position with that. I was just hired to help build stages and drive trucks.
Right.
And by the end of my tenure in that career, I was the manager of the largest tour that this particular company had going. I had people working under me who had master's degrees in marketing, and I was a guy who dropped out of college to go on the road, so go figure. But I did not become a fitness professional until I was 30. The most recent event marketing tour that I did was for a promotion for a liquor company. Mm. It was the search for the best party town for a very big selling liquor brand. And it was a great job to have when you're in your 20s. You know, we'd go to all these different college towns, or as we were told at the time to call them, party towns, because it's a conflict to peddle booze in a college town.
Right.
We'd go to Cancun, we'd go to all these different places, Mardi Gras, Mimosa Beach, and we would do all these huge scale liquor promotions, which was a great job to have in your 20s. But when my son was born, when I was 31, that's when I decided that I did not want to really peddle booze anymore. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make the world a healthier place rather than a sicker place. And I mean this in a very non-preachy, non-judgmental way.
Totally.
It just wasn't for me anymore. So I was actually 31 when I became a trainer. Now, at the time, my brother Al Cavadlo had already been working as a fitness professional for several years. And he had been telling me for years, Danny, you should be a trainer. Danny, you should be a trainer. I'm like, I don't want to be a trainer. Nah, I don't know how to train people. I thought there was some hidden mystique that I didn't know.
Yeah.
But it turns out that all the things that helped me be good at the things I had previously pursued, like pay attention, like show up on time, like give a shit about the people you're working with, these were things that also helped me as a trainer.
Yep.
So I was not intent on getting into the fitness industry at any point until my son was born. And then I was really committed to helping people rather than harming them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can imagine too, like what you were doing for your career and then what you were doing personally in your own training was kind of like almost a conflict of interest in a way.
Oh, it was crazy. It was crazy. No, but I was lucky that the guys I was on the road with, we all like to work out. So even though we'd be up till 4 a.m. and be working 7 days a week, we would figure out a way to get it in. Just like doing the music. If it meant doing sit-ups on a pile of bird droppings, I did it. When I was doing this liquor tour, if it meant rolling up at the local gym and trading them a bunch of T-shirts branded with this particular liquor logo for a one-week membership, we would do it. So it's just one of those things that you always have the time.
Right.
You can always make the time, whether you go to bed at 4 a.m. or whether you wake up at 4 a.m. And I've done both. You can definitely find a way to fit the fitness into your lifestyle.
That is very true. So once you became a trainer, had your previous experience just doing your own, exercises and workouts on your own, did that feel like, okay, I know what I'm doing immediately? You felt comfortable, or did it take a while for you to kind of settle in?
I think that every new trainer goes through a phase where they feel like they don't know what they're doing. Every new trainer starts out feeling like a fraud because all of a sudden it's like, okay, you've been working out for 20 years, but I don't have this certification or I don't have that certification. And especially in the world of new trainers, where people are so into different certifications, in a way, new trainers are more into certifications than they are into being actual qualified professionals. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. Certifications are great. And the training process should be a process laced with continuing education. But there's no substitute for in-person experience. And I think that's one of the reasons that me and probably every other new trainer I've ever met in my life goes through those moments of self-doubt. No matter how many hundreds of hours you spent working out or reading about working out or studying working out, you don't really have the experience of being a trainer until you have the experience of being a trainer. And I think that holds true in all capacities of life.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree. It's just interesting because, you know, you came at it from a different perspective because you'd been training for, 20 years and then became a trainer. And, for me personally, I went to college, I ran track and field, got injured horribly, tried to keep running track and field, and was in and out of the weight room during that time because of the injury I had. And then when I decided I wanted to become a trainer, it was more because I wanted to help people avoid the problems that I'd had personally.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I first started, it was like, okay, I'm demonstrating exercises that I still can't personally do without pain here. And that was always the part that made me feel like a fraud for a while. But as I healed and as I got more experience, then it started to, it came into its own and I became more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when along the line did you decide to make your focus bodyweight training?
There was never one golden moment where I decided to make my focus bodyweight training. Now, bodyweight training was the first mode of exercise that I ever pursued. I come from a family. I got two brothers. We would have push-up contests in the basement, on the floor. My first and only piece of equipment that I owned for a really long time, which is still up in my parents' house, was just a dusty old pull-up bar hanging in the bedroom door. and it wasn't one of those ergonomic pull-up bars that you snap into place. It was just a right. piece of pipe. Right. We put some grommets in the door frame and stuck the thing in. So body weight training has always been my main method of training. But it's funny, you know, we were talking about being a trainer before. When you become a trainer, the tendency often becomes to learn so many different modalities. You work in a gym and you want to learn every machine and you want to put every client on every machine. And yeah. then you take a sandbag workshop and you want everyone to do sandbags. And then you take a kettlebell workshop and you want everyone to do kettlebells. So I certainly, in my greener years as a trainer, incorporated every piece of equipment that I possibly could.
Right.
You know, hey, today we're doing the all Swiss ball workout. You know, but then after time, a lot of those things just began to drop away. And I began to become more focused on the stuff that I had been doing the longest and I was the best at. And in life, not just in training, I'm very, very much a minimalist. Mm-hmm. I cook my own meals all in the same pan. I own one pair of sneakers. I own very few devices or possessions. So bodyweight training in its simplicity and its minimalism fits in very well with the person that I am outside of the gym. So it was never really, poof, now I'm the bodyweight guy.
Right.
It was more like a process of things coming in vogue and out of vogue and me settling in a place where I'm comfortable with. But a thing about being the bodyweight guy is I don't necessarily even do all bodyweight exercises with every person that I train one-on-one.
Right.
I do the exercises that are most appropriate for the individual. Mm-hmm. If I'm working with an individual who cannot shine on the pull-up bar, well, then I'm not going to have them do pull-ups.
Yeah.
I might have them do some dumbbell pullovers. I might even stick them on a lat pull-down machine until they build up the strength.
Mm-hmm.
I might have them do body weight alternatives like Australian pull-ups as well.
Right.
You know, there's a thing with the body weight training. What's beautiful about it is that every exercise can be progressed infinitely or regressed infinitely. But sometimes when you're training a grown man, you don't want to have them do the most regressed version of an exercise because it's bad for their ego.
Right.
Sometimes you don't want to have a 45-year-old man do kneeling push-ups every time you train them because they know it's an easier version of the classic. So in a case like that, you might want to have them do some light dumbbells. You might want to have them do some other exercises because they might feel better about themselves than they will doing a completely regressed version of a bodyweight staple.
Yeah, no, I completely agree about the ego piece. You know, you have to make sure that you're taking care of them spiritually and, you know, in their mindset too. And if they're always doing stuff that's, that, you know, to them should be easier, but it's not, that's frustrating.
So you want to keep them coming back. You know, one thing that I would always advise to a personal trainer is you want the experience of the person whom you are training to be a positive experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because way more important than the workout you give or your caliber as a trainer or the quality of exercises, way more important than that is building a relationship with that person. And that relationship will not build if that person doesn't want to show up next time.
That's so true. Well, what's been the most rewarding part of your coaching career thus far? If you had to pick one.
The most rewarding part of training anybody is bringing out the best in them. You know, there's a great feeling. You know, I've trained so many females who have come to me who never thought they could do a chin-up. Never. They've said to me, you know, I talked to them a lot, especially the first session, about what do they want out of training. And usually people say, well, I want to be in better shape. And then I say, well, what does that mean to you? Mm. I've talked to a lot of females that want to get to do a chin up. And I've probably coached at least 30 women into getting their first chin up. And that is an amazing feeling when you get someone to do something that they truly in their mind thought that they were incapable of.
Yeah.
If you get someone to do their first muscle up or their first pistol squat or their first chin up or bring out something that they thought they were incapable of is probably the most rewarding part for me.
Yeah. No, that's a great answer. Well, Danny, I'm going to transition a little bit here because you've got a new book out, Street Workout. That sounds awesome. Had a chance to look over it a little bit at the Progressive Calisthenics certification in New York City just about a month ago. And, you know, I having read Diamond Cut Abs and Everybody Needs Training and a few of Al's books, too, I have to say this one seems like it's heftier than the others. Seems like it has more content in it and more in-depth content. But I'd love to hear your take on it.
Well, Street Workout is definitely a beast unlike anything the world has ever seen. It is, without a doubt, the most comprehensive compilation of street workout bodyweight calisthenics exercises that I've ever come across or been involved in any capacity. Both Al and I have written books before about bodyweight training, but neither one of us has ever taken on a project of this magnitude prior to now. So we have every incarnation of every street workout exercise you can possibly imagine, from the very most basic through the most advanced and beyond. Mm-hmm. But even besides that, one of the things that we decided to incorporate into this book was an extensive part about programming. So we've written a lot before about exercise, and we've given a lot of different exercises in our previously authored resources. But we generally like to encourage our readers and our followers to develop their own programming and experience what works best for them. But this time around, while we still stand behind that methodology 100%, we decided to include a few more tips in designing your own programming.
Yeah.
Not just 10 or 12 separate workouts, but also hypothetical splits. Also, how would you approach doing a full body workout? How would you change the intensity? How would you scale it up? How would you scale it back? Mm-hmm. If you wanted to do an upper-lower split, how would you approach that? If you wanted to do a front-back split, a push-pull split, how would you approach that? So in addition to having extensive exercises and lists of workouts, we also have quite a bit about the programming.
Yeah.
Another thing that we have in this book, which I can't believe no one has ever had in a book before, is we have a section here called Taking It to the Streets, where we actually discuss different apparatuses you may encounter in your day-to-day life walking the streets and talk about what exercises you can do on them,
yeah,
whether it's a traffic light or a bench or a bicycle rack or anything, a pole, anything you might find. So we have photographs and descriptions of every exercise that you can do on any item you might possibly come across in your travels. And then, of course, we got the section on building a backyard pull-up bar.
There you
know,
go.
Everybody writes to me and they say, Danny, tell me about that backyard pull-up bar. How'd you build it? How'd you build it? So we decided to include an explicit chapter about the process of building it, but also the process of conceiving it and why one would want to have such an apparatus in their very own backyard. So street workout, man, it is definitely its own animal. And there's never been anything like it before. I'm super proud of this work. It's Al and my first official compilation together. So
yeah, that's what he was
saying. Always consult each other on other things. I proofread everything he wrote 10 times before anyone sees it. He proofreads everything I write probably 30 times before anybody sees it. But this has been a real collaboration in every sense of the word, and we're super proud of it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Well, I'm excited to read it too. So I'm going to pick up the physical copy of it here soon. After holding it, I was like, you know what? The ebook, I don't think is going to cut it this time.
The physical copy won't be available probably for another couple of weeks. Right,
yep,
now it just exists. The PDF, which you could get from Dragon Door, or the Kindle, obviously, you could get from Amazon. But we should have that paper copy sometime in August.
Awesome. Well, it looks like you and Al used a lot of New York City as the backdrop for the book. What was the process like in creating it? I bet you guys had a lot of fun taking those pictures.
We did have a lot of fun taking those pictures. And we did use a great deal of New York City as the backdrop. You know, we did shoots in Coney Island. We did shoots in Bushwick. We did shoots in the East Village. We did shoots in Times Square. We did shoots uptown. downtown. We did shoots all over the place. We did shoots on my block right here in Brooklyn. So we had a lot of fun with that. But one of the other fun things about this book is that Al and I have been fortunate enough in the last several years to travel the world teaching calisthenics. So we made it a point to include photos from Holland, photos from Germany, photos from Australia, photos from Los Angeles and Chicago and Washington, D.C., photos as a record of our travels from Sweden, from China. So we made it a point to make this not just a comprehensive manual of exercises, but also an anthology of sorts of our travels, getting to go to these places and connect with you guys, connect with the people listening to this, connect with the people in their hometowns, not just on the internet, but the physical experience. So this book, even though it's a recent release, we've spent years compiling these photographs, and it shows.
Yeah, no, I noticed that too, and I think that's really, really neat that you managed to fit those pictures from the workshops in. And, you know, I think it's a testament to you guys and Dragon Door and all the people involved with the process of creating the PCC that it's been really powerful for a lot of people. And, you know, myself and my wife, Megan, included, we really, really appreciated the experience and just the relationships that we got to build while we were there.
Thank you. I mean, we appreciated the thunder and the energy that you guys brought also. You know,
it was awesome.
The Progressive Calisthenics Certification is not great because Al and I are there. It's great because of the people that show up.
Right.
It's great because people come from all over the place. You came from Seattle, you and Megan.
We had people Portland,
at that
actually.
Workshop from Canada. We had people at that workshop from all over the world who came together because of the solidarity, this community, this common passion that we all share. So Al and I, yeah, we're good, but you guys are the best, you know?
Thanks, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So you've been doing the PCC certifications for, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, just a little over 3 years.
Just a little over 3 years. And how did you get involved with, you know, managing and teaching a certification like that?
Well, Convict Conditioning by Paul Coach Wade is the number one selling Dragon Door title of all time. And as many of you know or may not know, Paul Coach Wade, for whatever reasons, has chosen to maintain a life of anonymity.
Mm-hmm.
So Dragon Door is a trailblazing pioneer in the world of kettlebells. And Dragon Door has the RKC certification, which is the world's premier kettlebell certification. It is by far the gold standard and the first and best certification of its kind. Mm-hmm. But with the popularity of Convict Conditioning, and subsequently, Al and my books, Dragon Door decided it was time to do a body weight certification based on the teachings of Paul Coach Wade. But Paul Coach Wade maintains a life of anonymity.
Right.
So when it came time to have instructors for the course, it was a no-brainer. It had to be Al and me. And I'm glad it was.
Yeah, well, I mean, I first heard about you two reading Convict Conditioning 2, and I think that was the first book you were featured in, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so then after that, it sounds like opportunities started coming your way and led to the PCC.
Yeah, opportunities and preparedness.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, it wasn't like that all of a sudden you just started doing this stuff. You'd been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, we, you know, it's a funny thing about opportunity because everybody gets presented opportunities, but it's really a question of just taking them and running with them.
Right.
And something Al and I are really good with is we try to deliver and over deliver to anybody who seeks anything from us.
Yeah.
You know, and Al is the same way I am. You know, you send him an email, he'll reply. You send me an email, I'll reply. You comment on something, I will reply. It's really a privilege that anybody gives a hell about anything that I have to say. And if anybody reaches out to me, I feel fortunate to hear from them, and I'm going to do my best to give them whatever I got.
Yeah. Well, it shows, man. It really does.
Thanks, brother.
Well, Danny, I know you got to get going here, but for any people who are budding calisthenics enthusiasts that are interested in getting started with bodyweight training, do you have any advice for them and how to best get started?
Absolutely. it's very easy to see things on the internet and on YouTube and in these books and have these very elite or esoteric goals. The human flag, the muscle up, the pistol squat, the plyometrics, and all these are spectacular and viable goals. But the advice that I would give to anybody is to get really, really good at the basics. Mm-hmm. Get really good at those pull-ups. Get really good at those squats and lunges. Get really good at those dips. Get really good at those push-ups. Because those foundational exercises are really the basics for anything that follows. And you know, when I was coming up, there was no internet. There was no YouTube. There was none of this stuff. I had been doing pull-ups for 25 years before I ever even saw a muscle-up or a one-arm pull-up. So in a way, I'm lucky. Because I didn't get to see 100 European kids making muscle ups look easy by putting on YouTube. For me, I had a solid foundation in the basics before I ever even attempted any of this stuff. And what's funny about it is at the time, you know, I could probably do 25 dead hang pull ups or 40 deep down dips before I ever even tried a muscle up.
Yeah.
And when I did try a muscle up for the first time, I still couldn't do it because it's a skill unto itself.
I'm still working on that one myself.
Yeah. I mean, if people had any idea how long it took me to get some of these moves, they'd probably be a lot less impressed with me. But that's why I'm hoping I could share my knowledge and share my experiences with people. And hopefully people can learn from my mistakes quicker than it took me to learn from my mistakes.
Yeah.
But that would really be my advice to everybody is get good at the basics. Do those sets and reps. While freestyling is absolutely a noble pursuit and a spectacular virtue in its own right, you really gotta lay the groundwork with those sets and reps. Pick those sets and reps, pick them up, put them in your program, and do them for a year. Get really good at them. Do them for 3 years. You don't have to be like me and do them for 25 years before you try a muscle up. But incorporate them. Take progress slowly. It's a process. Yeah. And like we said at the beginning of the interview, right? Like we said at the beginning, we have this tendency to be very goal-oriented as a culture, but not very process-oriented. Yep. So get involved in the process. Get those sets and reps. Train hard. Train frequently and train intensely. Yeah. That's my advice.
It's great advice. And I think that can apply to just about any pursuit.
Oh yeah.
Get good at the basics. I know I did martial arts for about 10 years growing up. And by the time I finished, it was in high school and I was moving on to college. So I moved away from the school I was training at, but I got my first degree black belt and that was kind of the culmination of that pursuit. And they didn't call you a master. They called you a master of the basics when you got that designation. Right. And
you got to get the basics, like martial arts, right? Like the movie, the Karate Kid movie, wax on, wax off.
That's right.
It's the house.
That's
Mr. Miyagi, what am I going to do with this? You know, but it's like you got to get the discipline.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's not based on a true story or anything, but I do like the sentiment of, okay, this is not going to be the most glamorous stuff we're focusing on, right. But it's about showing up and being diligent and putting in repetition.
Exactly. Yep. Well, Danny, thank you so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure having you on. And we'll have to do it again sometime in the future, too.
Definitely, Brad. Thanks a lot. Keep the dream alive, my man.
All right.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you haven't done so already, please give us a review on iTunes. And now we can also be found on Google Play Music. Until next time, remember, train hard, train heavy, and consistency is king.